my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 111 of my 1-2-3 cents, the podcast. And I'm doing things a little different this week. My original plan was to have a guest on by the name of Mike Masters. And for those of you who have been following along on social media, 5 years ago this week, actually, I wrestled my one and only match with All American Pro Wrestling against a guy named Mike Masters. And our schedules over the last couple of weeks just did not mesh up and didn't work. So Greg Mahochko, the creator of the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network that you're listening to this show on, approached me with an idea of doing kind of a Q&A, and he would facilitate that. So without any further ado, Greg, thanks for the idea. I love the idea and the concept here, and I'm going to let you kind of take it from here.
And we got to say, Kevin, that this concept is kind of stolen from one of our favorite podcasts, and that's co-hosted by one of your previous guests, Conrad Thompson, on Twitter at Hey Hey It's Conrad. And that show, when you had him on last summer, I believe.
Yes,
it was to, if my understanding is correct, you know, and I have been behind on my 1-2-3 cents listening, but I listened to a mess of them this week, and really good stuff. But when you had him on, it was when primarily talking about when his hosting the Ric Flair show, and I think towards the end he mentioned something about this new podcast he was about to launch, or maybe just a couple episodes in, that's called Something to Wrestle with Bruce Prichard.
That's right.
And so from listening to that episode, I jumped on the Something to Wrestle with Bruce Prichard bandwagon and have been listening to that ever since. So if you listen to that show, this show is going to sound a little familiar to you in that, you know, we're going to kind of take that approach to it. Kevin, you're the guy in the know, and I'm the guy kind of on the outside, and we're going to talk about this this program that you worked to step into the squared circle and defeat, as we all know by now, Mike Masters 5 years ago, AAPW. Let's kind of set the tone a little bit and go back and kind of tell people a little bit about what AAPW, or All American Pro Wrestling, was. It was a monthly show, I believe, that was kind of set out of Black Diamond Harley-Davidson, Marion, Illinois. Who were the main promoters of AAPW?
Well, you know, I said, you know, just like they do on the show. And I do not have a chicken salad recipe, but
by the way, let's see. ProWrestlingTees.com/Bruce Prichard, and don't put a T in his name. Put a T on your back. I think you know, we'll try to, you know, weave them in and out a little bit as well. But at the same time, we're borrowing their idea. I tweeted to the guys, you know, last night, and I said, I hope you don't look at this as gimmick infringement, or at least if you do, we're doing it in a way that helps promote your show, and this is just a one-time thing. But anyway, you know.
You know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, they say.
So. That's what I'm thinking.
But AAPW had originally started in the mid-2000s, and it was a promotion here in Southern Illinois. A guy by the name of Sean Chambers was running the show back then, and they were doing – they weren't on TV at all. They were just doing spot shows whenever they could at different venues. Then enter in a friend of mine named Chris Hagstrom, who has also been on the podcast here. He has a background in television as well, production side. And for one of his projects for the students that he was working with at Southern Illinois University, he wanted to do a wrestling show for TV. He approached me because he knows that I work at a TV station and asked what I thought the possibility of getting it on TV was. I put him in contact with the right people. They talked. They came up with a deal for a biweekly show, which we would tape every month. And on those off weeks of TV, it would be on the internet. This all started coming about in the spring of 2011.
Now, just out of curiosity, who's the, uh-huh. the right people that you know?
The general manager at our station, the general manager slash owner, Steve Wheeler, and a couple people on our sales team. They took the idea because we don't do a whole lot of locally produced programming just because it's very hard. And it's even harder now because of new FCC guidelines. And that's part of the reason why AAPW went away from TV, because FCC requires now that everything on TV be closed captioned. And closed captioning is not a cheap proposition. So on top of all the production cost and the airtime, now you also have to add in a closed caption part of that as well.
That's something I didn't know. When would have those regulations or stipulations been put into effect? Would that have been about the – and I say the end and without any you know real ominous connotation, but would that have been around the end of the AAPW time or –
No, it would have been around about the time that it went off the air, but AAPW continued on a little bit after that, okay. Just on the internet instead. But yeah, it really went into effect, I think, in early 2013 when those guidelines went into effect.
And listeners, new listeners to My 1-2-3 Cents may not know, but yeah, you are a morning news anchor. And long time, obviously long time wrestling fan. That's why you have a wrestling podcast. So they know that. But how long have you been weaving, pro wrestling into the on air stuff? Because it's no secret to viewers in Southern Illinois that you're not above a little self harm to put yourself over. And I think we all remember the taser incident. So how long have you been able to weave the benefit, I guess, of having a producer or general manager who doesn't mind, you think of, news stations and that a lot of times they're a lot more stuffy and from what I've seen of, WSIL TV, can I give the, it's too late now. I already
absolutely.
Did. But they seem to just get the news out there, but also to have fun. And that, I think, plays hand-in-hand with your love of pro wrestling. And like I said, able to weave it in and out.
Yeah, and that's, way back when, this was before TV and before I really knew much about AAPW, the former champion Edmund Livewire McGuire came on to promote a show that was featuring Brutus Beefcake and Greg the Hammer Valentine. They were going to be wrestling each other in Southern Illinois. That's the first instance that I remember somebody coming in, and I would estimate that was probably about 2006 or 2007 that we did that. And whenever there's a fundraiser show, a spot show, because we have interview segments on the morning newscast. So, other promotions, other companies that have come and gone since then would come in and talk about their events. Well, Chris, as I mentioned, Chris set up the deal and got us on, or got AAPW on TV. Well, he approached me about doing commentary with him. He would kind of be the executive producer of the show, have all of his students in place, and kind of directing it / producing it from the commentary table. So the first taping happened at the SIU arena, but it happened during the weekend of WrestleMania. I don't know what number it was, but whatever one was in Atlanta. And that I was not at that taping because I was at WrestleMania that year. So Chris said when I got back, we would sit down, and what we did is in post-production, which is what they used to do back in the day on Superstars of Wrestling and all those shows, we voiced live to tape, basically watched the show and did commentary.
Since you've done commentary both ways, live and mm-hmm. to tape, I would imagine that to tape is a lot easier, but at the same time, as far as getting it right, you can have another take, but the excitement perhaps maybe not be there because you're not there at the venue with the energy of the crowd.
Exactly. And that was the only time that we did it that way. Every other instance then I was able to be there for it. So the first one was at SIU. The second one we did at a little place in Carbondale called Sports Blast, which is now something different. But, you know, like you said, doing it live and being there was awesome. But before we even did that first taping, Chris came on the morning show to promote the fact that they were going to do the taping and announce that AAPW was going to be on Channel 3. So it got easier cross-promoting that because it was a program on our station. So he brought in two wrestlers, Heath Hatton and Mike Masters. Well, right before we went on, they approached me about the idea of hitting Mike with a chair.
Huh.
Mike was going to come out because we had pushed the news desk out of the way, and Chris and I were doing the interview, and then I was going to interview Heath as well as being kind of the poster boy for AAPW.
Heath Hatton, by the way, current Stride Pro Wrestling champion, if I remember correctly?
That is correct, yes. So all Heath, right. And you know, it was a twofold process because Heath is a local guy. A lot of the other AAPW guys were kind of out of town. And, you know, to be in a TV station at 6 a.m. in southern Illinois, you want somebody that's kind of close. So it sure worked out that Heath had the look and also was accessible to being there. So they came to me with this idea of Heath and I would be talking. Mike Masters would come into this, you know, kind of barge onto the set with a chair in hand and say, "Why aren't you talking to me? I'm the face of AAPW." So kind of a jealousy thing. He was going to fight with Heath and then go to hit him with a chair. When that happened, I pulled the chair out of his hand and I whack him with the chair across the back.
So,
and he said, "Hit me hard," which I'm like, okay. So we didn't rehearse this. We didn't
sure
practice it. Literally 20 minutes before we went on, that's kind of what we decided to do.
Did you smarten up the rest of the crew to what was going on, or were they all just looking?
I had told a couple people this is going to happen.
Okay.
So don't freak out. This is what we're going to do.
Because I could
kind of hear them.
Who would it have been 5 years ago?
Gasping in the background. So
who would it have been sharing the anchor desk with you 5 years ago?
It was Emily Eddington, and then our producer Weston White, who's a huge wrestling fan too. So you know, and Emily was so cool and went with the flow, and you know she knew my obsession and whatnot and supported it completely. And she actually came to the matches down the road. And, you know, that was just a testament to our friendship. But
I could see a situation where, you know, if you didn't smarten her up and all of a sudden you just grabbed a chair and bashed somebody with it. And then she's like, I'm not going to sit next to him anymore.
Yeah, he has some issues here. So
help, please, someone.
Yeah. So my assumption was that was just going to be a one-off thing and, you know, we were going to move on. So fast forward probably for the next set of tapings, which happened in July, the one at Sports Blast. Chris wanted to come back on and promote it because AAPW Collision, the TV show, was not going to debut until September of that year because they had to get a couple of tapings in the can.
Sure.
Which, you know, for folks who don't know what in the can, just have some episodes ready to go. And so boom, boom, boom. And we're not waiting for editing and production time and all that. And it's all good to go. That's kind of a policy that they had at Channel 3 was they had to have at least three shows ready to go. So the SIU taping was two shows, and then we taped out at Sports Blast and got the next two shows. So then there were four shows already in the can ready to go for September.
Now, I know Ring of Honor, they'll you know, that when they're touring around and they're taking everything, they can have, you know, 2.5 to maybe 3 episodes of their hour-long show out of each one of these shows. So I'm imagining that, as you say, you know, you get two from the SIU Carbondale, you know, from the SIU arena, two from mm-hmm. from the sports complex, that you know, they're still just one event that you're just breaking up in production, correct?
Exactly. So what we would do is you would almost have it to where you had two main events. Like, you would work up the first, usually each show had two to three matches plus some interview segment and you know, some backstage stuff. So you know, you would go up to that main event for the first episode, And then we would stop, take an intermission, reset everybody, get everybody's cameras ready to go again. And then we would record the rest of the show. It's the same kind of concept, and you would knock out. And then, as I said, we also did, because we would usually stack maybe an extra match or two on each show, and then that extra match would become the YouTube, mm-hmm. the weekly, the bi-weekly YouTube channel, which Adam Testa, I think you've met Adam before, he kind of helped produce and get a lot of that stuff going, and kind of came up with some of those ideas and whatnot. So it all kind of worked in tandem where we knew, okay, this match is going to be for YouTube, and we kind of would promote then the next week's show. So it it definitely took a lot of pre-planning and, okay, this is what we're going to do, and we need to work forward to this next show.
And I'm just guessing here, but you probably didn't ask the fans to get up and play musical chairs, so it doesn't look like it's the same fans wearing the same clothes, sitting in the same seats. Probably just let it go and.
Yeah, we weren't that particular about it. It was just more, yeah. No, it was just, hey, come on out and enjoy it and whatnot. So, yeah, we didn't get that specific with it. But when Chris came in to promote that other show on the morning news, there was a little downtime. So he and I were talking before he came on, and he said, what do you think about having a match? And this was probably a year or so after the whole Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler angle with WWE, which I was not a huge fan of, because I didn't like Michael. It wasn't so much that it was an announcer wrestling. It was just kind of a more of a, I just didn't like the personality that Cole had gone, the changes that he had gone through. But I also thought it took away from the other wrestlers. And I told Chris that. I said, I talked to Chad, who fills in from time to time here on the podcast too. And, I was like, I really don't know if I want to do this, because I don't want to take away from the other wrestlers. And Chris and the booker at the time, and I don't know if they want me to name names on who was booking the show, so I won't say who it was, but he is also a wrestler. And he had said to me, look at this as a way, because And I get it, and I'm not saying this to pat myself on the back, but they were looking to bring in more folks to the show, mm-hmm. and to build up to a storyline with kind of someone who people in Southern Illinois know, who is on the TV every day with the news, was a way to kind of bring in some extra viewers, hopefully.
Sure.
And so I looked at it from that perspective. I'm like, okay, so a bigger, if I can help in another way other than just sitting here behind the mic, I'll do that. I was assured that it would be like a quick, maybe 5 to 6 minutes. I wouldn't have to take any bumps, and I was going to go over. I was going to beat Mike. Well, after the agreement was made and stuff, and I'm like, okay, I don't have to take any bumps. I'm not going to worry about this. Well, then as the event got closer, they're like, well, we're thinking now 12 to 15 minutes. and I'm thinking, I'm not going to be able to dodge him for 12. People are not going to like that. And then they're like, and you're going to be taking some bumps. So I'm like, I had only set up a wrestling ring, and, I had never run the ropes. I hadn't done any bumping or back bumps or anything. So after a couple of the tapings, Edmund Livewire McGuire, who was the champ at the time, showed me how to run the ropes and did some chops. And those chops, people say wrestling's fake. It's not. The chops are the real deal. You're getting stung pretty good.
And I'll tell you, even watching on TV, and it doesn't matter, if it's WWE, NXT, TNA, ROH, New Japan, when you see a chop and a chop done right, it lights the chest on fire, and you can see it turning bright red. I don't know. Here I am going to pull a page out of the Hey Hey It's Conrad playbook of things, but I don't know when we'll talk about him again. But Edmund Livewire McGuire, as you said, he was the champ at the time. Heck of a nice guy, and yes. And I've been friends with him for several years now and remember him wrestling up in Salem a few times. And when can we can you put a feeler out to get Livewire on the show? I mean, he's come on now,
definitely.
Kevin. Come
we,
on, Kevin.
We have talked before, and when yes, I will definitely have Livewire on. I know he's not wrestling anymore, but he is definitely still a fan of the business, and I believe he actually was at NXT. I think Nashville hosted NXT over the weekend. I think he was down at that show. So, yeah, Edmund will definitely be a guest in 2017 on the podcast here.
All right, good deal. So, as you said, after some of the you know, tapings and such, and some of these events, you were able to step into the ring and just learn some of the basics and. When they told you, oh, by the way, now you're going to be taking bumps, you're going 12 to 15 minutes, and you're still going over, as they're laying out this plan for you, how many months is it from the time they're telling you all of this until, you know, January of 2012 when you know, the night of the event?
I believe it was before the November taping.
Okay, so
that
you had...
they told me that we were going to go longer, and that's where they set up the match for. They had set it up, and the match is on YouTube and kind of the package that leads up to it, where Mike Masters beats Jay Spade, who comes out to kind of defend My Honor during, you know, because throughout the tapings we're planting seeds. We're not specifically saying it, but Masters kind of glances over and gives me dirty looks from the ring. Because he goes on a losing streak and says that it's all because of me hitting him with that chair on the news that morning, that he's lost his focus.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't focus with me outside doing commentary. So that's kind of the premise behind all the build up to that match. And so we talked about, you know, going longer at that, probably that November taping. And then it wasn't until that December show that I actually got in the ring and actually did some of the, you know, running the ropes and whatnot. And then Heath Hatton and I worked together just very briefly. And it wasn't in an actual ring. It was just kind of, you know, he was kind of showing me a couple of moves and things to do, because we didn't really, you know, Mike and I didn't lay out anything until that morning on January 14th, 2012, the night of the show, because, you know, being a part of the inner circle, if you will, we called it the Brain Trust, Chris, Adam, myself, and then Aaron Heller would help with setup, and there are a couple of other guys, Drew Robinson and Nathan, Nathan's last name is escaping me at the moment, but he would, God, I feel horrible about that, Nathan, I can see your face right now. Nathan Nor, okay. Anyway, it's Nathan. But anyway, we would set up the ring.
Sorry, Nathan.
And get all the chairs set up, and you know, we would. It was a long day because we wouldn't start the tapings until 6:30 or 7 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan Norman, by the way, Nathan Norman. Sorry, buddy. But anyway, we would set up. You know, we'd get there at 8:30 in the morning and start setting up, and then we would tear down that night too. So we were getting out of there. You know, it was 10:30, 11 o'clock, sometimes midnight before we would get out of the building. And then we'd have to take the ring back to where it went and the barricades back to where they went. So it was a very long day. So I set up, we jumped, you know, once everything was set up, I got in the ring and there were a couple guys there that worked over some more spots with me. Then Mike got there and we talked more about how everything was going to go down. But yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of prep time going into it, which looking back, I probably would have worked a little harder in the ring, but the access to the ring was just literally on the days that we did the tapings. It's not like Stride is now, where a ring is set up 24/7.
Let's go back to Jay Spade, because as you said, he came out to quote, defend your honor,
mm-hmm.
which I'm not going to lie, Kevin, kind of makes you sound like a damsel in distress. how did he in that aspect of it? There was a stipulation or something that you said, and again, this is in that that video package that leads up to the match, that you were so confident in Jay Spade that you say, yeah, you know, if I know he'll beat you, but you know, if he doesn't, I'll step in the ring with you. But I'm confident in Jay Spade. So how was Jay Spade involved in all of this?
You know, I don't really know. You know, and I don't want anybody, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but I will say, you know, looking back, you know, Monday morning Booker or Tuesday morning Booker, as they say, you know, if I were looking back, that was probably the one piece of the puzzle that made the least amount of sense, was bringing Jay Spade into it, because Heath Hatton was, he was a co-holder of the tag team title. So he was kind of involved in a whole different program by the time we got to that event. So, but since Heath was a part of that first initial contact on the news, and Heath was kind of on a roll with wins, it would have made more sense, in my view, that Heath comes out to defend my honor, and then Masters cheats to beat Heath, and then we build up to, because I would have had obviously more confidence and faith in a guy who had never been beaten in AAPW in Heath Hatton, mm-hmm. versus Jay Spade, who was also someone who had not won any matches either. You know what I mean? And that's not to disparage Jay Spade or Heath Hatton or Mike Masters or the Booker at the time, but from, you know, from a perspective now of, well, it would have made more sense for Heath to kind of be that go-to guy instead of Jay. But you know, Jay is a hard worker. He's actually a co-holder of the Stride Pro Wrestling tag team titles right now with Joey O'Reilly. So I have nothing but the utmost respect for Jay Spade, and I know that, you know, he loved every minute of getting in there and doing that and being a part of that. And I'm glad that he was, because you know, once we get to the finish and the payoff, we'll talk more about that. But he, I don't know if it was just because Jay worked hard, like I said, and didn't have any other program going on at the time, so they kind of brought him in to be a part of this.
And if I, why does it, and you'll have to forgive me and laugh, but it, as I'm thinking back to this, and I watched it yesterday, so it's in my memory, but not everything is perfect. Was there some comment made about from Mike Masters to Jay Spade about his girlfriend or something like that? Or is
he called Masters was referring to me as Jay Spade's girlfriend.
Oh.
Because in that little segment, we were doing an interview segment or something, and Masters starts going off on me. So then Jay Spade comes out and says, hey, you know what, why are you picking on this guy? He's a commentator, he doesn't wrestle. And so then Jay says something about, or I'm sorry, Mike says something about, oh, well, if you beat me, then I'll leave your girlfriend alone, or something.
Gotcha.
Along those,
okay,
lines. So yeah.
All right. Now it's all making sense.
Back to that damsel in distress.
and her name's gonna escape me now, but it's a, you know, Dudley Do Right is Jay Spade, and Snidely Whiplash is Mike Masters, and you're the oh, what in the world is her name?
I know who you're talking. I can't think of her name either.
I just know she's curly blonde hair and always tied to the railroad track for some reason.
Nell, wasn't it Nell?
Yes. So there you go. You're Nell. Sorry. Before we get to, you know, the payoff, if you will, this was AAPW's biggest show in history. I mean, in the history of the promotion, wasn't it? Because this was not only, you know, your debut and lone ring appearance, knock on wood, you know, to date. It might change. This was also the event. This was AAPW main event, if I remember correctly.
That is correct, yes.
So,
yeah, the whole buildup was, this was going to be, this was not going to air on TV. This was to be for a DVD taping. So it was kind of like our pay-per-view special, if you will.
So let's talk about the rest of this card, because
yeah,
like you said, you're a local name, and I'll even, you know, I'm not trying to stroke your ego or anything like that, but I'll go so far as to say a local celebrity. And that name recognition that people in the area would have some more wherewithal about. You know, they're more aware of you. But you're bringing in some global names from, mm-hmm. from, you know, wrestling. And two of the three names are, you know, they're SmackDown roster, or not SmackDown, their Monday Night Raw roster members right now at the time.
Yes.
Pac and El Generico, who, as we all know, is Neville. I think you're a little bit of a fan of him. And
yeah.
And Sami Zayn, respectively. And then, of course, Colt Cabana, who had been in WWE before. And I think for him, you know, he just, I don't want to say more comfortable, but it seemed like he had a bit more success, at least more happiness on the independent scene. And we were both fortunate enough to see him last summer in Marion at the Global Force Wrestling Show that Jeff Jarrett brought to town. But so you had those three guys come in, and also Matt Cross as well, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
So you had, for the wrestling fans, you had, you know, people who, you know performers coming in, athletes, wrestlers coming in who had that name recognition. But for more casual fans, you had Kevin Huntsberger.
Right. And see, that I had never heard of Pac before. I knew who El Generico was. I knew who Matt Cross was, because Matt Cross, for those of you who don't remember, had just been cut from Tough Enough. He was one of the – I still can't believe he's not – on the main roster, but I think he's also kind of in that Colt Cabana boat where he's found a lot of happiness on the independents, and I know he does a lot now with Lucha Underground. But
did you watch that Tough Enough season with hosted by Stone Cold? Do you remember why he was cut?
I can't remember if he said something. He rubbed Stone Cold the wrong way. And I don't remember if it was something he said or if it was something he did in the ring. But
what I remember...
go ahead.
What I remember about it is, you know, he came in with a lot of, you know, veteran awareness, capability, things like that. But and I'm not dogging on him, because, you know, obviously, you know, far more talented than I am. Just retelling it as I remember. Was very cautious, I would say, in the ring. I don't say to be hesitant, but almost like he didn't want to show off his abilities, because he didn't want to, I don't know, stand out. And so by not standing out, if I remember correctly, Stone Cold's like, man, you have all this talent, you have all this ability, you just didn't show it. So,
gotcha. Okay.
Does that sound pretty
exactly
accurate?
What went down. Yeah, I think now that you said that, because there was a couple guys, and I think they've kind of changed the format, or they went to more of a true novice. You know, they don't want. So many people with so many backgrounds now, I think, on if they do Tough Enough, or I know the last time they did it, they went for lesser known guys. But, you know, Matt was, I like I said, I knew who he was. I knew who Colt was, because Colt had done the stint, as you said, with WWE too. And I went on when Adam sent me a Facebook message and said, we've got Pac and Generico. And I was like, okay, I don't know what that means. And he sent me a link one of their matches from Japan. And I was amazed. I watched that match and I was amazed. And so then I got excited, because I'm like, holy crap, you know. And I'm not going to lie, there was hesitation from some people to put Pac and Generico on the show. And even the placement of where they were on the card and how much time they were going to allow them. And there was a lot of convincing behind the scenes of, these two guys are the real deal. We have to let them go on. They wanted to give them 10 minutes in the, you know, opening match, which there's nothing wrong with being in the opening match, but we wanted to really showcase these guys. Mm-hmm. And as you said, we did have fans come from the St. Louis area specifically, and I think there were some fans from Indianapolis or Indiana area, because these two guys, I believe, and I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong, this was the first time Pac and Generico had wrestled each other in a singles match. They had done like a fatal four-way and some tag matches, but this was their first singles match in the United States. I don't know if it was ever or within a certain... This was one of the first, one and only times that they wrestled one-on-one. Obviously, now they've done it a lot more because of who they've become, but... this was really a rare treat for wrestling fans, and that match is on YouTube as well, and I'll put a link to that on the description here of the show as well.
And so you have, you know, those, like you said, they'd wrestled in Japan, and you're bringing, you know, people from St. Louis, from Indianapolis, from, you know, let's just say, you know, maybe Paducah or Nashville possibly even. I mean,
sure.
All we know is it was the biggest house for AAPW at that point. And then when you're trying to figure out the nice way to put this, when you're backstage in the locker room, you know, things like that, and you're like, oh, I'm the announcer, but I'm working the storyline with this guy, and I've never wrestled before. Did you feel any more pressure to, I don't know, go out there and not screw up or anything like that? Or because, I mean,
I did, and you know, the biggest thing was, because like I said, we got there early that Saturday morning and started setting up, and we were expecting about 200, because you know, AAPW shows at that time were probably drawing between 50 and 100 on average. I'm ballparking that at Black Diamond Harley-Davidson. So I had some Facebook friends who said, oh, we're going to come, that weren't, you know, wrestling fans. My coworkers, you know, a handful of my coworkers who are not wrestling fans were like, we're going to come out and support you. My wife and kids who are not wrestling fans came to the show.
I gotta stop you right there. I don't know how. I know how your wife could not be a wrestling fan, but I don't know how some of this didn't rub off on your kids. Even the youngest one, who by the way is my favorite. So
well, they, you know what, my middle son and my daughter have both. Actually, at that time, my middle son was a fan because we went to the Royal Rumble a couple weeks later in St. Louis. So
okay.
He was a fan, and my daughter was still pretty young at the time and actually did not handle me getting beat up very well. I don't know that they ever showed her on camera crying, but my wife said she cried a lot during the match because I did get my butt kicked a lot. But I had fraternity brothers come down from St. Louis who I hadn't seen in years. And at one point, you know, we're all backstage kind of talking and stuff. And there are two things that stick out to me about Neville from that night. One was, before anybody even got there, he was in the ring working with one of our local guys, Farmer Billy Hills. And, you know, this guy at that point he wasn't the household name, I guess, that he is now with WWE, but he was an international star, had
sure.
wrestled in Europe, Japan, all over the world. And he was taking time to work and show. And it wasn't even so much like the physical side of things, but just kind of talk. You know, I could see them talking, and I could see he and Farmer connecting on, you know, tips and advice and whatnot.
Ring psychology.
So that stood out to me. Yes, exactly. So then when we were backstage, Neville was sitting in a chair and, you know, talking to us and whatnot. And somebody came in and said, we're running out of seats. Like, this place is filling up. Neville stood up and, you know, because sometimes these guys have a bit of an attitude and whatnot. He stood up, handed his chair and said, you guys need it out there more than I need it in here. And so they went through and swept the locker room, took all the chairs out. I think the official total was 405. And it,
wow.
It got to the point where it was standing room only, because I don't know if you've been to Black Diamond or if you look during the match, there are people standing up on the raised section where the motorcycles are
right.
stored.
Yep.
And usually that's a no-no, but Black Diamond didn't want to turn anybody away. So they were letting people kind of go where they could go and have a spot to watch the show. It was insane.
It definitely was. I mean, and here's the thing, you know, if you're used to, you know, other shows where they're talking about what they draw, and, you know, if they're drawing 100,000 at WrestleMania last year in Dallas, or, you know, 90,000 at the Silver Dome a couple of years ago in New Orleans. Thank you, Hulk Hogan, for that one. I'll never let you forget that one. But, you know, or even, you know, they're coming back to St. Louis. WWE is later this year for Money in the Bank. And, you know, that'll be about 18,000-19,000. And so you think, you know, okay, well, those are good numbers. And then you hear 400. But you got to remember that this is 400 in a place that is used to 75, you know. And
right.
So if you think about it, it had to feel, you know, for the guys who, you know, who aren't Colt Cabana or Matt Cross or Generico or Pac or Hatton, who, you know, as we know, and I think was it Jay Spade as well who went up to Chicago in that 2-1 on Ryback?
It was Ace Hawkins, who was also an AAPW guy at the time. Yeah.
Hatton, you know, or Hawkins or Spade. I mean, you know, those guys who they have been to Chicago and been in it. But if you're just, you know, I mean, it had to be just go from, you know, 75, let's say, the month before to 405. That had to give them just an overwhelming, like, swell of pride, I would think, and be like, wow, this really is the main event, you know? And to hear the selflessness of Pac, you know, and like you said, before the event, and then, you know, and we're like, oh, here, you guys need it. I don't need it, you know, that type of thing. And you from everything that you've said, because, again, listeners, I don't know if you know this, but Kevin is kind of a fan of Neville, and he remembered you, you know, a year or so back when you went down to Access. Was it Fan Access, or was it?
This was just an autograph session at a Toys R Us, yeah, in Dallas at WrestleMania this past year. So that was really cool. And, you know, like you said, it 405 doesn't sound impressive, but when you put it into that perspective of it being a local indie show, you know, it was just an amazing night, and so many people worked so hard to get us to that point. And, you know, not only did I wrestle that night, I also did commentary up for the first half of it and then went back and got ready for my match. But even having the opportunity to call that Pac Generico match, I didn't do it justice, because I was in such a state of, well, I was, you know, thinking about what I was going to be doing later in the night too, but just the fact that these guys, it was just an amazing exhibition that they were putting on, and it was just a great opportunity that I will never forget.
Do you remember who went over in that match?
Pac did. Pac won. And I can't remember if he did the Red Arrow or not, but he definitely went over. And like I said, I'll put that match up too with the link on the show and the descriptor this week.
And when you saw them, and like we've said, coming in, you knew that they were global names, that they'd wrestled all over the place. When you saw them in person, did it click for you that these guys are going to get their chance someday?
Absolutely. After they wrestled, after seeing them on YouTube was one thing, but then seeing them in person and you know, meeting them, I didn't know that it would happen as quickly as it did, because I believe they both signed developmental deals later that year, and then started on NXT in early 2013. So within that year, they were both, Sami Zayn and Neville were working on NXT. And then, of course, both of them became NXT champion. So to see that happen for them, and like I said, we chatted before. They were all great. We chatted before, we chatted after the show. And then the brain trust, if you will, went to Steak and Shake after the show, which was what we usually did, because there's not much open in Marion, Illinois at that hour. What's that?
There's a Denny's somewhere.
Yeah, in Carbondale, though. So Steak and Shake was literally, like, within walking distance to Black Diamond. And so we're sitting in there eating, and then the four of those, you know, the four, we called them our special guests, the four special guests came walking in, and, you know, we talked for a few minutes. But it was surreal, because it's like we just worked a wrestling show with these guys, and now we're, you know, sitting almost side by side at Steak and Shake, you know, wrapping up the night and talking about how amazing of a night it was. And, you know, 5 years later, it's still one of the highlights of not just my wrestling, but just my life in general. It was such an amazing and euphoric experience. I can't even fully put it into words.
We'll get back to your match. And after one more question, El Generico, did he wear the mask at Steak and Shake?
He did not.
Oh, okay. Was that?
He did not.
Was that primary? Because you hear so many, you know, stories about luchadors who, you know, will go through you know, airport security wearing their Lucha mask. And so I just didn't know if his was primarily just for, I don't want to say for show, but primarily for when performing, and then he'd, you know, put it off and become a regular citizen.
Well, I will tell you this. At Black Diamond, the locker room is just one big room. There's no bathroom or anything off of it. So the bathroom is across the hall. Now, when he did go into the bathroom, he put the mask on.
That's funny.
And went to the bathroom. So when he was in the arena, I say the arena, when he was in the venue, he kept the mask on, you know, except for when he was in the locker room. And then, you know, once he got out and whatnot, he took it off and you know, ate dinner or, you know, his post-match meal or whatever without the mask on.
Became normal once again,
because I don't know how many people in Marion, Illinois at that time would have known who Sami Zayn or who, you know, El Generico and Pac and Matt Cross were.
Most of those guys, you know, could, you know, it's not like, to borrow one of your words, not to disparage these guys, but they don't have that, you know, global, you know, force behind them, and not Jeff Jarrett, but you know, where their faces aren't printed on shirts, or at the time, you know, weren't like a John Cena or, you know, a Jericho, or, you know, dare I say, even Roman Reigns. By the way, Chad sent me a picture of some Roman Reigns socks, and I told him he should not get those.
I think he got the New Day ones instead.
That's what he told me. Back to your match. Let's talk about it. You know, in people who have never been to an indie wrestling show, first of all, support indie wrestling. While at the end of the show, we'll plug a couple of upcoming events that might be in your area. But traditionally, the heels will come out first, get a little heat on themselves. You know, they'll make a trip around the ring, and they'll, you know, in my experience, they'll rip up a sign because they're jerks. You know, they'll point and make, you know, mean faces at little kids and things like that. And then the babyface comes out, and, you know, because they've been trained to hate the heel, they automatically cheer the babyface. And Mike Masters, of course, the heel, comes out and does exactly like I said. You know, he's pointing and then the music changes. Since you did commentary, not like at Stride Pro Wrestling where you do ring announcing. So who was the ring announcer?
The ring announcer was a guy. He was a I want to say kid because he was a young guy at the time. He was in college. His name was David something, and I apologize. I don't remember his name. He was just one of Chris's students who was somewhat of a wrestling fan, but he just wanted some experience doing something like that, and so he came in and was doing the ring announcing stuff.
Okay. Music changes, you know, and he introduces you. You come out, you know, you're not the ball of fire that we were anticipating. You looked a little hesitant, a little nervous. I think at one point you went over to the announcing table and spoke with Chris. Be like, Chris, do I really have to? And Chris says, man, there's a contract signed. You got to. So how much of that? I mean, we're both, I don't want to say we're smart marks, but, you know, we both know enough. You know, is that just playing it up for the kids and, you know, like, or,
yes.
Or, yeah, I figured.
Yeah, I was told to be very hesitant and not, you know, try to talk my way out of having to actually go through with it. And I was supposed, which part of that was legit nerves, because I wasn't so much worried that Mike was going to hurt me, because I trusted Mike.
Sure.
Because he is a seasoned professional and had been wrestling for years up until that point, like probably more than 10 or 12 years at that point. So I had no hesitation wrestling with him. I was more worried that I was going to do something to hurt him or hurt myself. But him hurting me, I was never worried about. But yeah, they wanted me to be very hesitant and try to delay the inevitable.
And played it off very well. Like you said, you know, him having a decade plus, you know, almost a decade and a half of ring time and being the veteran in this case, you knew that from his end you were going to be taken care of. I could definitely see where you would have some of that, you know, hesitation, be like, you know, the anxiety of, all right, I've got to do it right. It's got to look right, and I can't hurt him, you know. So I definitely right. know where that's coming from, which you would think would have been something that you would have worried about, you know, a few months back when you cracked him with a chair. yeah. I mean, I've never hit anybody with the steel chair. I've wanted to, several individuals actually, especially in my line of work or previous lines of work. But let's go back to that, because we didn't really talk about. I mean, all you said was that he just told you to hit him hard. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen, you know, concussion tests and things like that, and you know, I think the WWE has kind of done away with headshots. Yours was a pretty solid back shot, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it was on the back, because I was not a fan of the headshot with the chair. And actually, as we were talking backstage, because before we even went out there, we were still kind of working the finish. And there was discussion of me hitting Mike with a chair over the head. And I said, I am not comfortable with swinging the chair at your head or you getting hit in the head with the chair. So they changed it to where I wasn't going to have to do it, but he still ended up getting hit in the head with the chair, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, in a couple minutes here.
The match itself, I mean, you know, he's the heel, he's the bully, he pushes you into the turnbuckle, and you know, he's kind of almost doing a little bit of that flair, you know, like, maybe not flair, I'm trying to think of who a good comparison, anyway, somebody who you know, takes a knee, he's like, I dare you to hit me type of thing. And then he stands up, turns around, and my God, you smacked the shit out of him.
And that was the other thing, too. He said, hit me hard. And, you know, I don't even think I've been in a fight. I've been, you know, popped a time or two, but I not a legitimate fight. So I was very, very hesitant about even doing that, because I'm like, I've never hit anybody before.
Well, I'll tell you what, it looked good. It sounded good, and I bet it felt good, too.
Yeah. It, after I did it, I'm like, okay, I can do this. I can do this.
And I know, you know, like you said, you were thinking it was going to be, you know, 5 to 7 minutes initially. They stretched it out a little bit on you. Not a whole lot of, you know, a whole lot more than some punches and kicks. You did get scoop slammed a couple times. You got into the ropes, but you didn't have to run a whole lot of ropes. And
right.
It looked like in the video they were less ropey and more wire, like, you know, like a rubber coated wire. I mean, what were those ropes like? Because you see the ropes that WWE uses, and I think they're the ones that I watch that actually have a good looking rope to them. But some of the ones that I've seen on the indie scene are, you know, they're almost look like they're garden hose, you know.
Is more of a garden hose. Are these particular ropes were more of a garden hose consistency, I guess, if that's mm-hmm. the right word. And then just wrapped with, which that's a pain in the ass too. Let me tell you, wrapping those ropes and then cutting them off to rewrap them for a different promotion that's going to have a different color scheme.
Oh,
so
geez.
Yeah, that they were, and that's just like. It's not so much duct tape. It's a thinner version of duct tape. But yeah, you just kind of wrap it up, and that's basically all it was.
Not the most comfortable. I mean, if you had to run those ropes, I could see where that would be a pain.
You're definitely feeling it from hitting, because you're hitting it right around your rib cage area, like right under your armpit,
mm-hmm.
and they show you how to kind of hit it, so you're not going to wind yourself or gas yourself early on in the whole process.
What was it like taking that slam?
You know, before we went out there, he had said to me, if you get lost, if you can't remember what we're going to do, just roll over to the ropes. I'll kick you and I'll catch you back up to what we're doing.
Okay.
So when he picked me up, I made the mistake of keeping my eyes open, and everything, it's like, you know, when you're on the roller coaster ride that goes upside down, when I hit the mat, I was completely disoriented. Oh, I didn't know up from down. My mouth was cotton. I had a mini, I don't want to say panic attack because I don't want to undersell what people who are really having a panic attack go through, but there was probably about 5 seconds of, what the hell do I do next? and then it started coming back to me. But I'm like, I think I probably should have closed my eyes and I wouldn't have gotten so disoriented. But it, you know, like I said, he slammed me and everything else went according to kind of the, you know, we talked about how we were going to do things and when I was going to move out of the way when he was running the ropes and you know, the chops and all that. Mm-hmm. And like I said, those chops are legit. And he probably held back on me somewhat, but my chest was still red after it was all said and done.
And it's funny that you mentioned, you know, it's like you said, after that, you looked up at the ceiling, eyes are open, and that's when you become disoriented. But it's like, you know, if you close your eyes on the teacup ride at Disney World, you're okay. If you're spinning around in circles with your eyes closed, you're okay. But when you open up, that's when you start to feel dizzy. So I could definitely see where that would disorientate you because you're moving. He's moving you very quickly with a, you know, it's a short, what is it? It's a short drop with a sudden stop, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, so, but yeah, just how much, I'm assuming that because, you know, both of you guys have short hair, there wasn't a whole lot of calling it in the ring. Because as we all know, that's why wrestlers have long hairs, so they can, you know, block the movement of their mouth. So they're, you know, unless you're John Cena, and then you can just tell everybody what you're doing on the microphone. So you laid out the match ahead of time. And, you know, obviously he takes a run at you in the turnbuckle, you move, so you get a little respite. You know, he's trying to, you know, he's got you on the second rope, I should say, and he's doing his running and jumping on you and pulling on the rope and choking you. I could see where that would make your daughter a little like, oh, crap, that's my dad. you know, obviously the good baby face always moves out, you know, in the second or third try. And then take us through the go-home, through the finish, because you were able to save face, baby face, because I would think that if you were the one delivering the fatal blow, if you will, with the chair shot, then, I mean, yeah, the crowd might have popped, but you come off looking a little less, you know, innocent, I would say. So, again, we go back to, you know, Jay Spade and his involvement, and walk me through the finish.
Sure. Well, Mike has basically beat me up so bad. He goes to pin me and he pulls me up at two, you know, the typical, you know, heel move where he's overconfident and whatnot and wants to punish me some more. Well, that's when Chris Hagstrom gets off of commentary and runs to the ringside area and starts pleading with the referee, you know, stop the match. He can't take it anymore. You know, Masters gets over. Because Masters at this point has brought a chair into the ring and was going to hit me with it, and he stops, and then he unfolds the chair and sits in it.
And it's worth mentioning as well that Chris, while on commentary, says, oh, come on, just get the pin and just end it already. You know, he was pleading through commentary to Mike Masters to end the match and you know, for lack of a better phrase, put you out of your misery.
Exactly. So, you know, Mike is going to hit me with the chair, but he doesn't. He unfolds it instead and sits in it. And I'm basically groveling at his feet and he's just taunting me, you know, smacking the back of my head, kicking at me and stuff. Well, then he gets up and I think he folds the chair back up and he gets up and goes to talk to Chris and the referee who's got his back turned still. And in the meantime, Jay Spade runs out, grabs the chair, taps it on the mat, and that's kind of the cue for Masters to turn around. Mm-hmm. And when he does, Jay knocks him in the head with the chair.
Now, that was Masters falls. The headshot that you were uncomfortable doing. So it,
yes.
And that was, if did it, let me, I guess let me ask this in two questions. Did it have to be a headshot? I guess it would have had to been to knock him out.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you said, you know, I don't want to be the headshot chair guy.
Yeah.
And that's when they got Jay
involved. Mike was insistent on it being to the head. Yes.
Okay. Because if you look at when you watch the video, folks, or if you remember it, he didn't do a whole lot of trying to block the chair. You know.
No. If I were going to do it, I had suggested I get it to him in the abdomen, like do the end of the chair into his mm-hmm. gut, and then when he doubles over, I smack him in the back like I did at the TV station,
sure.
and then he falls flat, and then I just roll him over and pin him. But he wanted to do the headshot, so he took the headshot, and then I didn't know it at the time, but he was split open
oh, wow.
and bleeding like a stuck pig, and so I pinned him. 1, 2, 3. I looked down and they said, oversell the celebration. This is huge. You jump on the ropes. So
right.
I climb the ropes and I'm cheering, you know, and the fans are cheering. And then we go around and we're walking around the ring. And I look down and I see blood on my hand and on my pants.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm like, I wonder if I, you know, cause I, you know, I thought maybe I busted something open and I just bled a little bit or whatever. And we're coming around the corner and go back through the curtain. And I look at the monitor and there's some of the guys are running out past us. And it still hadn't clicked as to what happened. And then I look and there's a pool of blood in the ring. And Masters ended up getting 6 or 8 staples in his head because the chair hit him just in the right. Like Jay didn't get him quite right with the flat part of the chair. And it kind of hit him where the chair, the back, you know, the top part
right,
of it
right.
is, and
Ooh.
Yeah, it did not land well at all.
So, afterwards, Mike Masters says, hey, you know what, sounds good, a chair to the back.
Yeah, so they took him to the hospital, his wife was there, and they ran him over to the hospital, and like I said, he got, I think it was 6 staples in the top of his head as a result of that.
So, you get to celebrate. You get to I know there's a database and a friend of mine and friend of the My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, Jared Smith, always sends me this link, but it's like a wrestling database of you know, records and win loss and things like that. Do you think Kevin Hunsberger's in that wrestling database?
As much as I'd like it to be, I doubt it, but I tease everybody every once in a while and say, you know, I'm 1-0 and yada yada. And there are some guys on the Stride roster who want me to wrestle and want to be the one to end the quote unquote streak. Although I guess one match really isn't a streak. So,
yeah, but you are undefeated in baseball terms. You're batting 1,000, and now we got the rest of the story. There we got, even got to incorporate some Paul Harvey in there on your. Big match, your lone wrestling match, Mike Masters, AAPW main event, and that was January 14th, 2012. Did that taping ever get onto DVD?
Oh, yeah, it's on DVD. We sold quite a few. And, you know, we marketed it, too, with having obviously the international appeal of Pac and Generico and Colt Cabana and Matt Cross, so... But yeah, if you look at the DVD cover, I'm on. They broke it up into little squares,
sure.
and I'm on one of the squares where after I won, kind of raising my hands. Jason Wilkie, by the way, the photographer for that night was out of Mount Vernon, Illinois. He did an amazing job with the pictures. But Pac and Generico are on the front cover, and I think Edmund and Axe Allwort wrestled for the title that night. They're on the cover, and then on the back there's some of the other guys. Matt Cross is on there and Poker Face and some of those guys. So yeah, it was it sold, and I think Chris May, I don't know, they ordered a bunch and they sold a lot of them. I don't know how sales ever officially went with it, but I know because of the international appeal that folks were buying those DVDs.
All right, so I've got to ask, just because this is what the other two do. ballpark me a payday. No, I'm kidding. I enjoyed it. Hopefully, you know, you, the listener, enjoyed listening to this. I certainly enjoyed visiting with Kevin about this and learning more about his program with Mike Masters and how it all started when you were just trying to get some promotion for AAPW on the morning news. Kevin, this is your show. I'm going to let you take it back over.
All righty. Well, Greg, thanks for the idea. This was fun. I appreciate doing it. It's better than me just sitting here talking for an hour about what happened. So, folks, more guests coming up, lined up. Edmund Livewire McGuire. I know that we've talked in the past. We'll definitely have him on. And going to have some more Stride guys on, too, as we build up to some more Stride shows, especially February 11th. I've been talking with Cape Championship Wrestling, too, about some ideas that I may be getting more involved with their program as well. So I'm looking forward to what 2017 has in store. Be sure to follow on Twitter and Instagram and, of course, Facebook, all under the My123Cents moniker. So,
and Kevin,
for Greg Mahochko, yeah.
I was going to say, we were going to plug a couple local shows. Next Stride Pro Wrestling show is?
February 11th.
And Cape
Championship. No love lost.
No love lost. Cape Championship Wrestling. Their next show is coming up just in a couple weeks. It's actually the 28th. It's the Saturday right before Royal Rumble. And you can check them out. They're back at the arena building there in the arena park. That's about as exact as I know because I've not – I lived in there down there for 5 months, but I don't even remember the name of the street I lived on. among all the other CCW talent that they have, Davey Richards, former ROH champion and I believe TNA champion as well, based out of St. Louis. He'll be down there, and he'll be taking on his trainer, Tony Cozina. So that's going to be a good match as well. And
yeah,
a lot of grudge matches will be settled in the steel cage at the arena building. And that is, again, Saturday, January 28th in Cape Girardeau, Cape Championship Wrestling. Find them on Facebook as well.
Yes, indeed. And follow Jittery Monkey on Facebook and Twitter as well. And we'll have all the links in the write-up here at jitterymonkey.com or on iTunes. Everybody, thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.